Mr. Robson, could you tell me a little bit about what the depression years were like for you?
Well, we felt it too. Because you couldn't get no work, no place, except if you was a good worker. Then you could get work. Because that year, I was getting about $15 a month. The bonus money I was getting from my mother. That's for me and my wife. And when time came that I had to get the license for the car, I didn't even have money to get that. But I had a cow which I raised myself, see, and I sold the cow for $10 to get the license. And then after that, things were getting worse and worse. And I'll see, and my wife tells me, says, I don't know what we're going to do, but I think if we buy a farm, we might do better. She says, oh no, he says, you stay right here. I said, I'll find work. So I went to Green Bay in my boots and towels, and I've got work, and I worked. So times weren't really hard for me because I had the ambition to work, and I could do the work, see. But if you didn't want to work, well, then it was hard for you.
Did a lot of the other people around here have trouble?
Oh, yes. Some of them, the way I tell you, you know. If you don't know what, after you got money, if you don't know enough to save some of it, well, you're going to get in a pinch, you know.
And you went to Mr. Boosenthal because of your woodworking
skills. And I worked for him 2 years. He wanted me to go back again. I said, says, I'm staying on the farm. I prefer it. It was outdoors work and plowing and all that stuff. That was fun, you know. And one thing too, my mother was living yet. After the harvest, we wanted to pull away for a few days or a week. Well, my mother could take care of the stock here, and we'd go. And that way, we had no loss, you know. We had our vacations, and we went away. We went to South Dakota, and once to North Dakota, and once to Iowa. That was different years, you know. Well, 5-6 days, went like that was fun.
Did you visit relatives and things?
Oh yes, visit some in Fargo, North Dakota, and in Nebraska, and then there was some in North Dakota, but I didn't get to get there. And gas was cheap, you know, for a dollar you had your tank full, so it wasn't costing much. And I went with my cousin Norris Collins. When he got back of about 6 weeks, he was killed in a saw accident. See, he was cut right in half.
On his farm?
No, on the farm the old folks had. It was my first cousin and my best friend.
When was this?
Oh, that was way back in he was just married a couple years. He had 2 kids. He was 2 years younger than I am. So that's quite a while.
When we visited you before, Mr. Robson, you mentioned the the cottagers, the new people that have moved into Dykesville, has it really changed?
Very much. Very much. It's not Dykesville no more.
How has it changed?
Well, it's more, this is mine and that's yours and you stay there. We don't visit to each other like we did years ago.
When did they start coming in? The summer people.
So they really started to come in around 1916, 1917. And they kept on coming and coming, you know, and they're still coming.
Like 1960, I guess, they would start, 1960, coming in?
No, before that. Because I remember at Dykesville, there was the first two saloons and no stores yet. But then the year after, Hector Schmister built a store. There was only two taverns, that's all.
Was there a store in Dykesville when you were growing up?
Yeah.
A grocery store?
There was one. The first store was Van Dyke. That's a free. And that was where the Standard gas station is there. On this east side of it, and where they parked there, that's where that store was. I remember we were even going and playing it when we went to catechism. Then there was a tavern on the corner, and then there was Putty's tavern. And after a while, then Smeester built a store. He was here. But he sold here to Ben the Baker, and Alf Foxham went and built in Dykesville, see.
Was there a main road through Dykesville in those days?
Yeah, it was 78 then. They're out on the way going to Sturgeon Bay, see.
Was there any kind of stage or anything before you had cars, or?
Yeah, there was a stage. I remember seeing a stage in school by.
Would they stop between Green Bay and Sturgeon Bay?
Well, if they had people to unload, yeah.
When you were a boy, how often did you go into Green Bay, or did you?
Oh, once a year, maybe. Because for our clothing, we were boys, see, we mostly went to Algoma.
I see.
With the chemo horses, we'd leave in the morning, we'd get there around noon, and at 2:30, 3 o'clock, we were ready to come home. And in Green Bay, well, it's the same thing. We'd leave here at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to. I went twice with the chemo horses and my brother. Once to get an organ, and once to get a stove.
Who was the organ for?
For
your family?
For me, yeah. I was around 13 maybe, 11, 13. When Norman was still here, and they went with the team forces and wagon.
How many were in your family? Name your brothers and sisters for me.
There was Norman, there was Joseph, myself, and my twin brother Eli. And then there was one girl, Anna.
And Joseph was killed when your father was killed?
Yeah.
Could you tell me about that one more time? about your father and what happened and Joseph, and you were 4 years old?
There isn't much that we can tell.
They were killed by lightning.
They were killed by lightning, and we, us, all I can say is you were unconscious, that's all.
Were you in the house when it happened?
Yeah.
And that was your father and your brother?
Yeah.
And that would have been around 1907 or
1907, I guess.
1907. And then your mother kept the farm.
Yeah.
Was it hard for your mother to make ends meet?
Oh, she had a lot of work, you know. But she was a good worker. She'd go inspect the hay in the barn, you know, as when we haul it.
Did women do all the work on the farm back in those
days? They all help. Yes, they all help. The one that didn't help didn't make no progress and didn't stay on.
What changes have you seen in farming in your lifetime, Mr. Robson?
Big changes. It's too big now. You know, tractors are too big. Everything is too big. At that time, well, we had a team of horses, and we was walking in the furrow and whistling and doing this and that and going. If we just found a big stone, we stopped and put it out. But with the big tractors now, there's no more stop, you know, they go right through everything. I still think I liked it better the other way.
What was the farm like when you farmed it as a young man, when you took over the farm? Did you have dairy cows?
Oh yes, 14, 15 cows. And we bring the milk, sell the milk, you know, to make cheese.
Who did you sell the milk to?
Cheese factory. Well, it was Dawes, Eugene Dawes, who first built the cheese factory here. But after a few years, when there were more farmers, they got together and formed their own company. So the Smeesters had the cheese factory then. So they kind of forced Smeesters to sell, see. Or if he didn't sell, he could do his want. If he didn't want to sell, he was going to build anyways. So Smeesters had no other choice than to sell. And the company was running, doing pretty good. And ran quite a few years. But then we had some younger guys, four directors, who I would say wanted to follow everything the county agent was saying. But that didn't last long, you know, that they were all bankrupt, you know. They couldn't get no credit, couldn't get nothing no more. So they went bankrupt. Then we put our milk on the truck then to go to Tier Dames.
How did you get interested in making clocks, Mr. Robson?
I always liked them, and I was looking at them, and I sent for a set of patterns, you know, back in I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, something like that. And my wife seen that. She says, oh no, he says, I don't want that in the way. So I put it aside, you know, I didn't say nothing no more. Then a couple of years after, I said, I'm going to make that. And I'm sure that, I was sure, you know, after she saw it made, that she'd like it. So I started, when I had my shop over there, in between the violins, I started to work on it. But if I hear somebody come, everything in the drawer. And it was pretty near finished when she seen it. And she started telling, you know, I don't want that. That's in the way. That's too big there. I got enough in the house without that. I'll sell it, I said. And when it was finished, she was there to finish it. You know, she's pretty good at that. When it was the last quote, she was there. You know? And she said, now that's mine, she said.
So she liked it once she went through.
Yes.
How many cuts of finish would be on the
clock? Oh, there are about 6 or 7 on those.
Where do you get the works from?
That comes from Germany. And that was the big one there. That was the one. And when I made a bunch of small ones like this, they were kind of nice. And this one had a different sound altogether. And then she was in the shop and she heard that. She says, that's a different clock, Louis. I said, oh, it's in the same. I ordered 6 movements. It's the same movement as the other ones, I says, but it does sound ring nice. That's mine, she says. She grabbed it in her arms, she brought it back in the house, and it's there, still there.
It's beautiful. What wood is that one?
That's walnut.
Walnut.
And making stuff like that with me, she was good. She would make a violin with me, you know.
She would help you with the finish work?
Finish work, and she could even work the planes to graduate them. She was good at that stuff. And she liked it, too. Except but towards the last, when she started, took sick, I had 3-4 clocks finished. And I asked her, you going to finish the clocks, Els? And she looked at me, she said, not now, she says. And I couldn't get her back to get her started. And then she soon found out what was wrong. She had cancer and it got worse and worse.
What kind of social life did you have around here when you were growing up, Mr. Robson, with all the other Belgian neighbors and everything?
Oh, on Sunday afternoons, a bunch of boys, we'd go in the creeks, you know, fishing, because there was a lot of fish in the creek at that time. And baseball, a little bit here and there sometimes. And then when we got cars, then it was further, you know. It was the, what you call, sideshow, circus, and all that stuff. But outside of that, we were pretty quiet.
What holidays did you celebrate, especially?
Well, there was mostly the religious holidays like Ascension and Assumption. 15th of August, and a couple others in.
What was that like, the 15th of August?
Well, the 15th of August, people would flock to the chapel, see. Lots of people, 10,000-15,000 sometimes. And then make the procession and pray all along. That's all there was. But, half of them wasn't to celebrate the 15th of August, you know, it was to see the, they had those merry-go-rounds and a regular carnival, that was all. And then the priest got mad because it was turning into a carnival instead of a religion, so they cut it out, but people kept going back.
They quit sending a priest?
Yeah, and they quit sending a priest. They done with all of them.
Do they still have that now?
No, priest go, there's a priest that stays, goes there now.
Did you have a big celebration for Kermas?
It used to. But the celebration was mostly relatives, you know, from like us, the Collins. Well, there's mostly the Dow, which is in Green Bay, and then the ones from Hamburg, and sometimes the ones from Menominee would come. When there was a couple boys by Joe, and a couple boys by Eddie, and one couple boys by Benjamin, that was in Merrill. You know, they'd all come, but they'd flock here because Norman was here. Depries, there were no boys but except my age, and there were two older girls. But it wasn't the same. They didn't want to do with that. So those boys then they stuck it out with Norman here. They were about the same age.
And how long would your celebration last?
At the beginning, up to 3 days.
And you have special foods and...
Beer.
Beer?
Beer, that's what they had. And special pie and special chicken.
Booyah?
Oh, yeah.
What is booyah?
Well, that's the liquid of a cooked head. Cooked chicken. It's mostly liquid of cooked chicken. Then they put a few carrots in, a few potatoes in. But some people can make good bouillon. You know. You could eat it when they made it.
Is it like a stew? Or a soup?
There's not as much meat as a stew. There's a few chunks in it and it's mostly that liquid. Preparing for it was a big day. Then it started to die down. There wasn't so many people no more. And some of the relatives, well, like Norman and John Ginyes and Joe Collins, well, they got married, so then they didn't come no more. And that kind of settled down.
When do you start playing Cuyo, the card game?
Oh, that they start when they're 4 or 5 years old with their parents.
I see. Do you still play?
No, very seldom. Some of them do yet, though. Yeah, I remember here when we had to do our school lessons. And then me and my brother, my sister and my mother, we played a game or two of Cuyo. We put a little of that.
In the evening, I see. That's kind of fun before you go to bed.
When we went to bed, we played.
It's interesting. Is Cuyo like poker? Is it, or what's it, is it a gambling game?
Yeah, they make it a gambling game. So they pay poto, you know. And that's when they pay for money, poto. And it's cuyo. But I never played poto. Gambled money for playing cards. It was always 10 lines you're in. And if you lose one game more than the other side, well, then you're the loser.
I see.
And Cuyo is not a hard game. It's all trumps. The ace from two, well, it's in the nines. There's no eights in Cuyo. It's, there is an eight. And anyways, the higher up the trump, the better the trump, see. And What you turn is Trump. And if you got enough to make sure that you're going to make 21 points, well, you can go. But if you don't make them, then they take one line away from you.
I see.
And if you make it, well, you get that extra line. Well, we used to, then after a while, then we used to play so much was with Norris Collins and Elsie here and their wives. You know, we used to play so much together. We only, sometimes we'd play 4 or 5 games, we wouldn't even get a game. It was fun. Then there was a game they also played, Bronco. That was a king and a queen was a Bronco, but I really don't remember it no more that. And there was a stag, where you bid so many cards for so many pennies for so many cards. And there was one they called the old woman, which was the ace of spades, and the one who had the ace of spades was the old woman.
You had mentioned earlier that every house had some kind of music back in those days.
In those days, yeah.
And what were the instruments?
There were all kinds of them. Clarinets, cornets, and violins. And of course, in every home was an organ. There was one by Collins, there was one by Depries, and nobody would learn. But most, a lot of the men, older men, they played violin. And there are some they could play pretty good. I got one on record here from Emil Boehringer. Just where he is.
Of him playing the violin?
Playing the violin. And Anton de Beck singing songs. I've done that for the university, for Smithsonian Institute or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I got one of the those.
Then would the families visit each other and play music and dance?
No, not to play and dance. No, they had the halls. When there was a dance at the hall, they'd go there. And then the older folks, they didn't go to the dance no more. But most of them, like my grandpa, Grandpa Robson, well, he didn't go much to church because he preferred to go and play cards at Putty's. He'd go and play kuyong. You're in church and all the time, there was no time to lose. You had to play cards.
Were the women more concerned with the religion than the men, or?
Yes.
When you were growing up, I guess the religion was really important.
Yeah, yes, and we had to go to church, you know. You know, there's no question about it. My dad, when he was a young man, he was a fireman on the train up at Dunbar and Pensauke and all them places around there. So he didn't go to church while he was working at it. I think it's 2 or 3 years that he had worked there. And then they were going to make a draw, going on and load up poles, I guess. And he put a man on the engine to run the engine to get those poles. And the man was, I think he was half drunk, I don't know what, but he killed a man on the track, you know, and going there. And that was the end of it, you know. My dad was done with the train. No more training. He went and worked in the woods then. He says he's seen enough of that. That man had to pull his legs off and one arm, I guess, from under the wheels of the train. That happened, I think it's in Dunbar. Dunbar or Munistique, one of the two.
He worked in the lumber camps?
Yeah, he was a lumberman. And then there were him and Charlie Jolson here in Art Namer. They took their teams in the fall and they loaded their wagon with hay and oats and they went way up north with their team by way of Green Bay. And in spring they'd come back in time to do the work and they were done loading their poles and all that stuff.
This was even after you were born, after the children were born.
Yeah, I was born.
So your mother would have been alone mostly in the winter.
Yeah.
So I guess when your father died, she was pretty much used to handling things.
Oh yeah.
Somewhat anyway.
She was the boss of the house then.
And I guess Norman, your older brother, took a lot of the responsibility.
Yeah. Well, when my father died, he took a... He wanted to put it here.
Well, we certainly appreciate you talking to us, Mr. Robson. You've given us a lot of information and things that people will appreciate in the years to come.